We've already had an incident where Matt was screamed at by someone.
So called a socialist?
It's called a socialist faggot.
Yeah. A socialist faggot.
For me, also accurate, but like, why why be rude about it? Like,
harsh words.
Yes, yes, it's not true, but you don't have to be rude and like scream about it.
I really am a bard. I guess
that's... You are a bard.
I'm sorry, but...
I'm not opposed to it. I just haven't come to the knowledge, like... It's cool. But I like music-y things.
I had a song. I'd sing it in the morning. I'd sing it in the evening. All over this land. I'd sing out danger. I'd sing out warning. I'd sing out love between all of the people of this land. Well, I've got a hammer, and I've got a bell, and I've got a song to sing all over this land. It's a hammer of justice. It's a bell of freedom. It's a song about love between all of the people all over this land. It's a hammer of justice. It's a bell of freedom. It's a song about love between all of the people all over this land.
Thank you for letting me clunk through that.
We have reaffirmed and strengthened our commitment to anti-racism work and to being a welcoming and inclusive space for queer and trans folks. We had our first party, hosted two workshops, and hosted some local political organizing activity. We are in integrity with record keeping and key communications with supporters, and we made it through the first 5 months financially. So that's what I've got on accomplishments list. You're recording this. Okay, and we've gotten used to recording shit. Is there anything wants to add? We raised a litter of kittens. Oh, yeah. Yeah, why didn't I think of that one? They're still being raised. And got two strays fixed.
Mm-hmm.
We should totally be on here because there's like a shit ton of work.
Successfully caught a skunk and released it
without getting sprayed.
Right.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true.
You dealt with a skunk without getting sprayed?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's because Yana had pet skunks when she was growing up.
That's because I'm fearless.
Why are you a skunk this river?
I don't fucking know.
I mean, somehow we were able to... Somehow we were able to, like, yeah, open up the little... We have trap and release cages, which I need to return to laws, actually,
yeah.
unless we'd like to trap more, because I'm sure there's more kitties to trap, but we're also having raccoons and things, which might actually be part of the solution. Like, if we could trap them and release them far away, they might, like, be disincentivized to come back.
Mm-hmm.
No, the raccoons.
The raccoons. The cats I'm homing in.
Oh, you're trying to find a humane solution to the raccoons?
Yeah.
Eventually you'll come around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, other accomplishments.
I'm sorry.
Anything else you want to add to this? Okay, challenges. We don't have enough people. Finances related to the above, but also its own thing. Property costs about $3,500 a month to maintain, and that's a lot. The amount of cleaning and repairs that still needs to be done to get everything rentable is overwhelming. Some of our systems need tweaking and restarting, like the food system and compost. Half of our chicken flock has been picked off by predators. Yana and Matt traveling this fall, and Yana continuing to do so, means that our momentum gets interrupted pretty regularly. It is related also to being a small group. Like, I think if it was like we had 10 of us, it wouldn't matter so much if I was gone, but having a third of our members on is pretty impactful. We weren't really ready. We could have used more experience dealing with conflict and decision-making together. Starting a business at almost the exact same time as starting a community has added challenges because not everyone starting convening entrepreneurial energy is going to the same places. We are all struggling with anxiety and moments of depression as we struggle to get this thing solidly grounded, which makes everything harder and things sometimes seem worse than they are.
I think you've got a challenge that nobody knows about you. Us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a challenge.
Although
part of that
for me is somewhat like I choose to only talk to it about people that I trust at this point.
Right.
Because there is also an element of like fear for myself because we're not fully equipped to handle backlash, which is going to happen in Wyoming and as a socialist community. Like the more that we're open about ourselves, the more that we open ourselves up to retaliation, and I don't think that I'm not personally prepared for that right now. We've already had an incident where Matt was screamed at by someone. So
called a socialist?
It's called a socialist faggot.
Yeah. A socialist faggot.
Which is, for me, also accurate, but like, why
wow.
Why be rude about it? Like,
harsh words.
Yes, yes, it's not true, but you don't have to be rude and like scream about it.
So needs more members and renters, more podcast subscribers. Various physical assets are needed to fully manifest this: a truck, greenhouse, bigger chicken house, off-grid power, potable water source, etc. Support for the rest of the cleaning that's needed both inside the house and on the land. More stable and more abundant income for at least one member. More supporters to help us deal with any backlash, both locally and within the socialist world. Just added that. Other needs. Obviously, some of these are large categories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the same way, like, yeah, supporters and network.
Okay, cool. So other needs, or is that a pretty good list?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, assets. Friendly financing has been huge. Like, we got here because we have friendly financing. Offer of a small solar power array from Scott Morton. Lots of connections in town, mostly through Matt and Scully, and in the wider communities movement, mostly through me, having an experienced and skilled guy in Yana. Everyone currently here is smart, dedicated, cares about each other, and is capable of moving through their challenges to a good place. Huge! The podcast, IC.org listing, and Facebook pages are all assets for recruitment and publicity. A home warranty, purchased for us by our real estate agent, has helped ease some of the financial stress, and Costco membership from Archer has helped keep operational costs down. A workable office and studio for our business, guest space, art production spaces, outbuildings, and 10 other bedrooms means we have a lot to work with. Other assets?
Specifically in terms of the business, it's bringing in, well, this month it's bringing in almost $300, and it's bringing in about $200, getting to the point where it's bringing in about $200 a month. That goes directly into the community budget.
Okay, increase of income from podcast. Other assets?
What about your individuals? I don't think that you're accrediting your human capital assets. There's intellectual capital. I hate to bring this up again.
Mm-hmm.
You teach seminars all over.
Mm-hmm.
You can start teaching them here.
Yeah.
People can come to Laramie. That's what this space is great for. You and I, Matt, have law degrees that can be parlayed into something. Writers, workshops, editorial work. Mediation.
I mean
that academic aspect.
We could do that. We could get that
arbitration. I know we don't like it, but I mean
we could get that certification. I could do that in my sleep. I mean,
yeah, we could do that shit in our sleep.
Yeah, exactly. I did.
Yeah, don't.
And
don't.
That's,
yeah. I
don't
like
it.
You'll
take that the away from that. But we need to, I think that's something where we can look, because there's Yellowstone mediation. There's mediation work that can be done, and even if it only brings in $500 a month, if we do one or two mediations.
That would be huge.
That's a great idea. I'm really glad you thought of that. We need to look into what that certification takes.
The library on Isis Birdway, it's the office to come in there. We need the mediation.
Yeah, and but I mean, on that, like the example of the human capital is also that this month, you know, someone asked us to write a musical or to record a musical bumper for them, and they're paying us money to do it. And so, you know, I mean, it's like that. That is the sort of thing that is.
Yeah. Okay. Good to go.
Okay. Okay, I'm ready to go again, I think.
All right.
Is it rolling?
Yep.
All right.
I'm Eric McEwen. And this is... No. I've always wanted to do that.
Good evening, gentle people, and welcome to the Solidarity House Collective...
Something like that. That's going to go on like 5 episodes.
Oh, wait. Here's a... Good evening, gentle people, and welcome to the Solidarity Collective. What is it again?
Thanksgiving back.
Thanksgiving back.
I don't know.
That'll work for tonight. I just like having the question in there. What is it again? All right. Little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. It's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. It's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. Got to throw the small ones back. Well, your line was out, tackle box was open, you got a nibble, boy, you were hoping, but it never turned out to be nothing. Got to throw the small ones back. It's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. It's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. It's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. Got to throw the small ones back. Well, you brought one home. It was no winner, hardly a snack, much less a dinner. Fish caught too soon, just don't get bigger. Got to throw the small ones back. It's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. It's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. It's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. Got to throw the small ones back. Great big catch you thought you landed was just another minnow thinking highly of itself. You face the shore now empty-handed, and you think you'll go back home and put your tackle on the shelf. But you know, this time you just caught a small fish, one that wasn't worth the trouble that it took to reel it in. Don't think that this applies to all fish. Go out and cast your line again. Go cast your line again. You caught didn't match your wishing, and now you're thinking you're through with fishing. I say go back, keep right on casting, just throw the small ones back. Cause it's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. It's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. It's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. Got to throw the small ones back. I said it's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. It's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. It's a little tiny fish in a big, big ocean. Got to throw the small ones back. Got to throw the small ones back. Got to throw the small ones back.
Too, as they're trying to do solo visioning work, but it's not so big that you can't get anywhere. You know, sometimes I see groups try to do this with like 25 people, or they think, well, we'll wait until we get the number of people that we want, and then we'll start doing the visioning work. And that takes decades to actually do visioning work. I mean, and I'm serious about that. Like, I know some people that have been in this process for decades because they keep trying to have it be a really big group of people. So I think what you need really is a group of about 5 to 8 people in order to start doing this. So you also want to be clear enough about what you're doing. You want to do enough of the visioning that people know what they're joining. So it can't just be, we're starting an intentional community in Bellingham. Like, that's not enough. Like, people are going to be like, well, what kind of community? Is it another co-housing community? Is it a commune? Is this an eco-village? Is this a spiritual group? Like, you've got to have some of the basics figured out while you've got that small group so that people are, you know, at a place of like being clear about what they're joining and are sure that they're making a good decision about, is this a group that I want to invest time in? However, you can also err on the other side. I basically tell groups, if you have more than 2 pages of visioning work, you're too specific. You've gotten too much there, and it's going to be really hard for new folks to see themselves in whatever project is that you're trying to do. Okay, so there's the sweet spot. I think it's somewhere between like 2 paragraphs and 2 pages of thoughtful work on what exactly this group is going to be. And then at that point, I think you can start recruiting a larger number of people. As long as you've got solid buy-in from whatever your original core group is, that's about enough information to start bringing other folks in. Now, that said, there's a handful of words that every group wants to include in their vision statement, and they mean practically nothing. You want to take a guess at what some of those words are?
Inclusive.
Sustainable. Diversity, sustainable, you know these words, community, like what the hell does it, you're a community, it's about community, great. So the problem is that the words mean so many different things to different people. So does sustainable mean we're going to have a recycling center, or does it mean we're going to try to be at 10% of the U.S. average of consumption? Woo, radically different versions of what that word means, and it legitimately means both of those things to different people. Same thing with inclusivity. Like, sometimes people use that word and what they mean is we want to have a couple people of color in the mix so I don't feel all white guilty all the time. And for some people it's like, no, we're actually going to like really do the work of figuring out how to keep things affordable for poor people. We're going to do active anti-racism work so that we not only have people of color show up sometimes, but actually have them be fully at the table, you know, in the process of creating community. Like, those are really different. Okay? Diversity, inclusive, affordability is the same thing. Like, I see communities sometimes that, like, their affordable units are $500,000. Like, that's not affordable for most people. Maybe for downtown San Francisco, but that's not actually really affordable for most people. So you want to watch and make sure that when you're doing your visioning work that you're being specific enough about what some of those terms mean, that it actually means something, and that you're planting a clear flag in the ground so people know what they're joining. I've seen a number of groups that have used very general language in their development, and they get 3, 4, 5, 6 years in to living together, and all of a sudden they're like at each other's throats about like, you did this, I can't believe you did this. We said we stood for X, and they're like, well, that didn't mean don't do this to me. And it's like they never clarified that stuff. And so you can get yourself in trouble at any stage, even after years of living together, by not being clear enough about what some of this language means. Okay, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. All right, so... Great. So, so the other thing that I want to emphasize is that most intentional communities fail because of social dynamics. They don't know how to get along. They don't know how to make decisions together. They don't know how to resolve conflicts when they inevitably come up. Conflict is absolutely inevitable when you get into these projects. And that's because, again, we were raised in a culture that is about independence and competition. And then we get into trying to do something cooperative, and you're going to have culture clash with your very purpose and your baseline intentions. And so, of course, you're going to end up in conflict with each other. And most groups don't really take the time to learn how to do those social dynamics well, and then they end up falling apart. So that's the number one reason why groups fall apart. Another really common reason why groups don't get off the ground is economics. And this is becoming more and more true. Like, our economy is kind of collapsing around us right now. And as that happens, the percentage of people who can't afford to buy property, can't afford to buy a unit in an existing community, is going up pretty quickly. So there's a big piece around what I'm starting to think of as cross-class solidarity that often needs to happen in order to get communities off the ground. So that means if you are someone with some degree of financial privilege, I think you have an obligation to, if you're interested in this community thing, to actually put some of that on the table and help it be accessible for other people, or it's going to be a really limited pool of people that you can form community with. It's going to only be people who also share that financial privilege. And that is a quickly narrowing swath of the United States. And this is a diversity issue. It's also just a practical issue in terms of like trying to get things off the ground. Because often working class people have kick-ass skills when it comes to getting things grounded, you know, getting particularly your physical structures grounded. They know how to manage money really well because they have to, you know, in order to survive. And so I think there's a big piece and a growing piece that I'm starting to emphasize in these workshops more and more about figure out what cross-class alliances actually look like and really lean into doing work around class differences and around figuring out how to bring everybody's strengths in, even if their strengths are not monetary strengths. All right. Related to that, oppression and privilege dynamics are real. And I think that communities often get in trouble by not dealing with gender issues, not dealing with race issues, not dealing with class issues. So I want to invite folks to be thinking about that, like what work do we need to do to get savvy about the differences, the kind of diversity that will almost inevitably show up in your groups and are probably there without you even realizing it in some cases, that I think having a successful community at this time means being able to do that work with each other. And there's a lot of really good resources for that that are out there. Okay, so one other kind of random piece. In some ways, like the most important single entity that you are going to have in your community is your land, right? So whatever property you end up on becomes the container for your community. Hopefully its tenure as part of the community outlives yours. And so I see groups oftentimes rush into land decisions without being really clear about what their criteria is for it. A piece of property pops up, they get excited because it's beautiful or it's whatever it is, and they're not really taking the time to consider like what the implications of that particular piece of property are going to be for the nature of their community for the entire time the community exists. It's like, this is the longest term relationship that you're going to be in as a founder is with that property. And so I really want to encourage folks to take that decision really seriously. And it's okay to make decisions quickly when a piece of property comes up, but it should be based on work that's already been done previously about thinking about what you're looking for in the land and what different kinds of physical containers are going to mean for your community in the long run. And there's a woman in California named Cassandra Ferreira who was a real estate agent for a long time. It has sort of pioneered this concept of cooperative real estate. and works with intentional communities a lot. And I really encourage folks to look up Cassandra's work at some point in Ferrara. It's F-E-R-R-A-R-A. I'll add her to the list of resources. Because she has some pieces, and she's very spiritual in her orientation, but you can, if you're not a spiritual oriented group, that's fine. You can still take what she's talking about intention and relationship with the land, pretty seriously. And I think there's a neglected piece there oftentimes when, you know, they're like, oh, well, all we need is like 20 acres in this county. And I'm like, yeah, that's part of it. Like, that's important. The size and the location are important, but that's not actually the whole thing. It's like, does the property really, is it really going to foster the type of community that you're wanting over time? Does that make sense?
I want to ask a little more specific. Like, do you mean like, is it zoned where we can do the kind of cluster housing that we would like to do? Is the soil and the enough water to have orchards and organic vegetable gardens? Is that the kind of specifics you're talking about?
It is that, and it's also about the feel of the property. And, you know, when you step onto the property, like, does it feel like it is the right kind of container? So it's both the sort of like intellectual thinky data oriented stuff, but it's also about like, is this land that feels like it's going to be a home for the kinds of intentions that your group has, whatever those intentions are. So that could be an urban lot that, you know, is like on a super busy street, or it could be, you know, the peaceful rural kind of pastoral feeling thing. You know, it just depends on like, what's your intention and what is the sort of nature of the property that you're looking for, and does it match the kinds of intentions that you have? So you have to be clear about what your intentions are.
That's just what I was going to say. Implied. That should be part of, like, at the beginning, like, doing your mission and vision, and that should be part of it. So when you're standing there on the land, you can go, does this fit these needs and also your heart needs?
Right. Yeah, and so my community has just landed on property after about 2.5 years of work together, and we were able to be, like, we did it in 8 days when the property went on the market, and we were able to do that because we had gotten really clear about what's our checklist and what were the need-to-haves, what were the we-would-like-to-haves, and what were the, like, this would be a nice pipe dream if we got it stuff. We had a list of criteria broken down. But we also went out and walked the property multiple times together and asked that question, what does this feel like? Does this feel like a place that we could call home? Does it feel like it would match with the kinds of intentions that we have as a group? So we did both the, you know, the intellectual work as well as the sort of pause, breathe, connect with the land and see what it's telling us about who we would be if we were on this property.
There's another piece that I actually think of, Yana, is I ask it if it would like me to be there and take care of it.
And I love that. And, you know, more secular groups are probably not going to be asking that question, but I think it's, I think that's a great added piece to what I'm talking about. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, sometimes land has been cosmetically been ignored, and it has potential. Can't you pass up a property just because it doesn't have a hedge around it? Or
I don't think that's smart to eliminate a property just because it's trash. I mean, we actually the property that we just bought was completely trashed by the last owner, and like we have removed 3 ginormous dumpsters full of all sorts of stuff from the property already. The paint was peeling, the sidewalk was, I mean, much, much cosmetic stuff. And I think being able to, if you've got somebody in your group who is skilled at like looking past the surface to the bones of properties, that's a really, really good skill to have in your founding group. And most people are not actually that good at it. And most real estate agents don't help much with that. You know, they sort of want it to get as prettied up as possible and are a little embarrassed to walk you around a property like the one that we just bought. But yeah, I absolutely think you want to try to look past the immediate with that. And that's another reason to get out of your head a little bit with the process and get more into a feel space with it. Because that'll help you to be able to see past what's the immediate surface stuff. Okay, cool. So one section I do want to take a minute to talk about is this big three section on here.
Yeah, and if we just spend time too on the nitty gritty stuff.
Yep. Yes, I will. And I'm going to stop talking a minute and start like taking questions and having this be more of a dialogue that I want to say and everything. So the vision stuff, so this was the stuff that I was talking about with, you know, being clear but not excessively specific. And also, so particularly if you're a group that thinks that you're going to work with consensus, this is important for everybody, but it's especially important for consensus groups. Your articulated shared values that you have buy-in, that is what ideally is going to be guiding your decisions. So when you get into a sticky place, which you will at many points over the life of your community, where you're not sure what to do or people have different opinions about what to do, the better the work is that you do at the beginning around what your shared values is, the more you will have that thing to reach for and to go, okay, what does this entity, which was the group mind and the group intention, say about this particular thing? And if you haven't done a very good job with defining what your shared values are, it's going to make things much more difficult to make decisions, and it's going to be much more difficult to keep moving in the direction that you originally intended. So it is worth it to, you know, like my group took 2.5 years before we felt anywhere close to ready. And that's with somebody involved who has a lot of experience, and we were fast tracking a lot of stuff because I knew the right questions to ask and that kind of stuff. And we still took 2.5 years to do that work to get to the point where we could be that agile when a property showed up. And so this is not work to be rushed. You know, this is work that you really want to take time to develop and get really clear about, like, who are we and what are we doing together? Like, what is this group about? And so your shared values is really, really important foundational work. So the second point under there is about cooperative culture. So I've said this a couple times that, you know, we just have not been raised to be good cooperators. You know, you get past kindergarten and it goes from bring enough to share with everybody to how do I get into the best college possible, which is all about competing your way through the next 12 years of school. So I think it's really important to understand that every community is doing social change work and culture change work. Just by having the intention to do something cooperatively, you are going to bump into that stuff. And that is something that there's not necessarily a lot of support and understanding about out there. And so I would really encourage you to find folks who, you know, again, spend time in communities and get a feel for like how they're doing things cooperatively, but also really lean into getting some training in whatever your decision making is, particularly if it's consensus, because it's sort of the one that demands the most cooperative filter of us. Definitely get conflict resolution training. There's a lot of different conflict resolution tools out there. You just want to have something that your group is bought into and confident about. But make sure you get training in it so that you're not trying to figure it out the first time you're up to your eyeballs in tension with each other. And, you know, really think about, like, what is the culture that we're trying to create here and what do we need to put into place to actually build toward that kind of culture. There is a section in my book about cooperative culture development. So that's one of the things that I think is different about the way that I'm writing about starting communities and the way that a lot of other people have written about it, so feel free to paw through that or take a copy home with you if you want to understand what I mean by that. And otherwise, just be in touch and we can chat about it. But I want to emphasize that part, that I think the culture stuff is really, really important. And then the last one is the membership process. So oftentimes, groups don't really want to think about, like, how do we let people in? Because that feels like you're gatekeeping and you may be being exclusive in some way. And it's really important, though. You need to know who are the decision makers, who is actually invested in this. And you want to choose people carefully. You know, I used to say particularly at the beginning, but I actually think it's important to just choose people carefully all the way along, because you want them to be aligned. You want them to actually understand what the vision is that you're trying to do. And you want them to have a similar orientation around the cultural stuff that you do. And you only do that by figuring out how to do a sorting process and by being willing to say no and yes, being willing to do both of those things. The other thing is that depending on what your vision is as a community, Some visions require being tighter about membership than others. So if you're a spiritual group, you want to make sure that there's an alignment around the spiritual practice. If you're doing income sharing, that's going to push you into much more intimate space with each other, where you're going to have hard conversations about money. You don't want to have those conversations with just anybody and think that it's going to go well. You know, if you're trying to do something that is anything that pushes you toward being more communal, you have to be pickier about your membership process. Okay, and you have to be willing to actually follow your membership process. So put it into place, put yourselves through it as the founding group so you can feel what it feels like to go through each one of those steps, and then stick with that process and have it be something that is more than just like, oh good, you're interested, come join us. Like, that is disastrous more often than not. Okay, does that make sense?
Another one. Also, to be clear on what the process is, if you have to ask someone to leave.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Entrance and exit strategies. So that is actually part of the nitty-gritty stuff that you were talking about down there. And I can, if you want to send me an email, I can send you what my group has a membership process, and it's about 3 pages long that takes you through various stages, and then there's about 2.5 pages for how you kick someone out. So, because you want to handle that well, you don't want to do that arbitrarily. You don't want to do it just because someone's gotten uncomfortable, but you want to have a real process that both honors the integrity of the community and, you know, is not just willy-nilly cutting people out. Like, that's not how you should be doing that. But you do need to have both an entrance and an exit process in place before you land together on property. It's one of the very few things that I say, if you don't have that before the property, you shouldn't be buying property yet. You need to do that before you actually get landed. And I know of 2 groups that did that work of exit stuff, and particularly involuntary loss of membership, before they bought property together. So it is incredibly rare to do, and you really got to do it. Okay, cool. So do folks have questions about that big 3 thing? I know this is being very quick and a little touching here, touching there. Okay, so nitty-gritty stuff. So legal and financial relationships, yes, 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 you really need to do that stuff. And a lot of people at the sort of progressive end of the spectrum really don't like lawyers, and they really don't like spreadsheets and economics and business planning. That's often stuff that folks want to just sort of like, well, let's just trust each other and it'll all be okay. It is quite likely to not be all okay if you try to take that approach with it. I do want you to be building trust with each other. That's super important as well. And you still do need to have a legal structure for your group. You know, you need to be clear about, you know, if you're buying a piece of property that costs $1 million, do you have the financial capacity as the group, or the business savvy to be able to get to having financial capacity to be able to pay for that, or are you just setting yourselves up to be foreclosed on? Okay, so you seriously need to do business planning and have all your legal ducks in a row. Especially important when you get to kicking people out, actually. Like, you wanna make sure that your bylaws and your kicking people out process match up so that you don't get sued for kicking somebody out. So I know 3 communities that lost their property in that scenario. Okay, so it happens. You know, like, cover your asses for the sake of social change, please. Okay, so balancing protecting the group with protecting individuals. So this is just a perpetual balance point that happens. You want to make sure that you're thinking about what systems can we put in place that are both supporting us individually and also taking care of the group and not burning the group out long-term. Okay? And that balancing act is going to show up everywhere in how your economics are structured, how your social systems are structured, what your legal structure is. Like, can people's heirs inherit their house on the property? That's a classic one where this, like, balancing, protecting the individual and protecting the group comes into play. So you're going to have sticky questions all the way along, and you just need to be aware that part of why they're sticky is you're trying to do that balancing act with integrity. And property ownership, home ownership, commons ownership. So just being really clear about what your relationship is to ownership. Again, this is something that, like, a lot of people like my group is a bunch of like socialists and anarchists who just bought property where we're landlords, and it's really kind of funky, you know, for us. But we've been really clear, like we put the property into group ownership at the get-go so that at least it wasn't like a single overlord with everybody else. Like we were super uncomfortable with that. And we've still had to deal with the legal stuff around like who owns it, what does that mean, what are owners' rights, what are renters' rights, all that kind of stuff are still conversations that we've need to have, even though it rubs us the wrong way, like at a really fundamental level. It's just responsible of us in the long term to have those conversations.
You talked about this group in Laramie.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you also develop community with community that you're trying to fit in? Sounds like anarchists. Laramie is not exactly the hot spot for it.
No, it's shocking how few anarchists there are in town. So Wyoming is one of the reddest states in the country. And Laramie's kind of like one of like two, maybe three, depending on how you count it, sort of liberal hubs in Wyoming. And there's, you know, those joke maps sometimes where there'll be a state and they'll say like, you know, like, I mean, they're horrible. They're like rednecks, coal hicks, all that kind of stuff. The circle around Laramie says hippies on those joke maps. And we consider ourselves to be the sort of like the radical left within this liberal hub. So far it's going pretty well in that we are being able to be visible with meeting needs that aren't getting met very well, particularly for the trans and queer community in town. Like we are quickly becoming like a known place that's trans safe. I'm the only newbie. I've only been living in Wyoming for about 2 years at this point. But so strong piece of advice, build relationships in your local area. Do not isolate yourselves. Invite people out regularly. We feel lucky because the house that we bought is one of the oldest buildings in Wyoming. And we've been hearing stories about the house, including about how haunted it is, which has been kind of fun. And we are intending to put an ad in the newspaper this winter at some point and say, so, hey, we bought the Holiday Mansion. We know a lot of you old timers have stories. Do you want to come out and have dinner with us and tell us your stories? And so getting creative about like, how can you genuinely have connections and actually value what's happening in the town around you, even if it's super conservative Wyoming. So y'all have no problems here, right? Probably not at the scale we have potential problems.
I lived on a spiritual community in West Virginia. And it was not the most natural fit, but we found that it was what I called the 3-foot rule. When we got within 3 feet of somebody, they would relax because they could feel that we were actually good people. And so if you just go by the stereotypes, it doesn't work, but if you really connect personally, it can work quite well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. Where was that? Was that Newfoundland?
No, that was a temporary daughter farm of that farm in Tennessee.
Oh, interesting. Okay, cool.
It was in Wildcat, West Virginia.
Nice. Wildcat.
It's beautiful. Not practical.
I may be saying that in 10 years about what I just did. So. Yeah. Focus here. So
okay.
We're getting into like
there's more assets, but we got work getting
assets. Okay, so I've added increasing income from podcasts. Yana's work can be a draw of folks here. 2 law degrees in Matt and Jason. Musicians making earth monies. Artists who are supportive and can help raise funds. Other assets I should add to this.
Have you considered converting one of the apartments into a room?
That's what we do at the office.
We have one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we need to start advertising that to artists to come in and do recording.
I mean,
it needs to be, properly equipped to do that. But I've thought about it. Yeah.
For our purposes is fine, but if you were trying to rent that out to people,
I would rather bring in more artists to just to in a collaborative sense. And I feel like that's one of those things that I've wanted to do for a long time, but have just felt like we're not situated enough, or we're not landed enough, or it's not stable enough where we can start like really promoting, you know, mm-hmm. like collaborative projects that way. And you know, there's just like, you know, well, just do it, you know.
But so Quonset Hut could be leveraged better for collaboration.
Yeah, and I mean, in the studio and the art mm-hmm. space upstairs mm-hmm. and all of those things. Perfect. I've been meaning to vacuum out the tower for
the
literally months.
That's going to happen on my watch because I want to start meditating up there.
Right.
I will make that happen this week.
You deal with the mummified mouse corpse?
I will get rid of the mouse corpse that squished in the door. Okay, and that's happening this fucking week. I'll tell you what. Okay, it's too important, and that's what I wanted to offer you for my mental health support. I need a photograph of all of you so I can begin using my Ho'oponopono meditation to assist you.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to put Jason with an exclamation point on our assets list.
Got it.
With you?
That's why I want to clean up that room up there so I can start meditating up there and start using that for you all, and then also just to clear the energy. Because Mr. What's His Bucket left a lot of bad juju here.
That's true.
So, leads right to the door. So.
Okay, so it's 20 after 11. So I want to focus here. We have an hour and 10 minutes left to do a number of other things. So is there anything else that we want to add to this, or are we good for our snapshot for this fall?
Is that Leo pounding on the window?
Yeah. Is he in there? Or is
it
he
is a good cat.
Yeah.
It does look like a cat.
Yes, definitely.
Leo, he's been meowing, and now he's pounding on the window. He's going to grab a crowbar in a second, and he's going to call us on our cell phones. Yeah. Okay, I'm ending this recording.
We're taking on a big project here, and we need your help.
We are restoring this beautiful, huge house built in 1878 and the 3 acres of land it's on.
We're doing it so that it can be a cooperative, communal space for people to live, work, create, and do activism.
We want to share income and resources and be a place where people can live and thrive no matter how much money they make.
There are many ways that you can help us, but the most mutually beneficial way is to subscribe to Solidarity House on Patreon.
Your subscription supports the effort to restore the house and the land, and it gets you access to tons of bonus material, including full unedited interviews, our original music, and more.
Please subscribe to Solidarity House and help us grow a commune out here.
And remember, you're getting 3 podcasts for the price of 1. Solidarity House, Solidarity Wyoming, and Cowboys on the Commons.
Yeehaw! We're Solidarity House on Patreon and Solidarity House Cooperative on Facebook and Twitter.
This is called Beautiful Things. The world is never too full of beautiful things. The world is never too full. Yours from the start. All of the gold that you need was yours from the start. But you have to walk outside yourself to reach the riches of the heart, where all of the gold that you need was yours from the start. Some of us that means a little, to some it's a lot. To some of us that means a little, to some it's a lot. But it's hard to say we can't help ourselves if we're not using what we've got. To some of us that means a little, to some it's a lot. Your time to use it wisely now. Take what you find. share it while you can. The world is never too full of beautiful things. This world is never too full. This moment, can you hear the songs it sings? The world is never too full of beautiful things. The world is never too full of beautiful things.
Eric McEwen! Woo! Thanks a lot.
Appreciate welcome. Thanks for asking for some songs.
Absolutely. We make music here. Look at that.